try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Total protonic reversal.
Protonic reversal.
Protonic reversal with your host, Conan Neutron. Broadcasting from a secret underground lair in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A gigantic middle finger to everything that is rock about music, rock and roll, and corporate power.
The thing is, though, if you don't laugh, you're going to go on a killing spree with sharp and nails.
Confidence of a hero or a fool, I wasn't exactly certain which.
Could not be more professional.
It means something.
And they got away.
You know, that's my take on it. What's yours?
Protonic reversal!
That's like a science thing, right?
Indeed, indeed, indeed it is. It is a science thing. It is a science place. It is a scientific fact. They were all up in your face. It is time once again for the one, the only protonic reversal. Welcome to it, welcome to it, welcome to it. Episode 368. Coming at you. That's right. It's closing on 10 years for this show. Very excited to be presenting to you returning guests. He'll be on shortly after I get done doing this spiel. Jerry Casale of Devo, one of my favorite bands of all time, which you may know if you pay attention to the show because he's been on a few times. And always great to hear from Jerry. There's a bunch of stuff going on. Can't wait to talk to him about the recent touring, internationally included, the Devo documentary, and of course his lounge video, which is pretty fascinating for his own releases. But before we do literally any of that, I'm going to say these other things because that is what we do on the internet. Welcome to Conan Neutron's Protonic Reversal. I am your host, Conan Neutron. I'm a rock and roll lifer that's been touring and recording for 24 years, most known for the band Conan Neutron and the Secret Friends. Music is a huge part of my life, and I use the format of this very long-running podcast to talk about music with musicians whose work I enjoy and respect, but who may not be household names. This is episode 368. If this is your first time listening to the show, archives of it are available for free. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding, at protonicreversal.com. However, if you want to support the show and get episodes sooner, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal will achieve that goal. If you like the show, even just a single episode, please feel free to like, subscribe on your platform of choice, share around the internet, and even just leave a review. All that helps people discover the show. It beats back the almighty algorithmic overlords, and just a darn nice thing to do. Definitely pushing for those patrons right now. There's a less revenue stream coming into the Neutron household suddenly. And could definitely use some folks to step up. So that's the last I will say that. I hate begging on the internet. Devo has been an institution for many years for freaks, nerds, and weirdos, much like myself. And it is no small degree of honor that I've had this gentleman on as many times as I have to poke, prod, and cross-examine the many aspects of de-evolution over the years. Through music, culture, and whatnot. So, I guess this is where you say my next guest needs no introduction, but I'm literally giving an introduction. That's a contradiction in terms. But hey, here's Jerry Casale.
Hello there.
Welcome back. It's good to have you. You've been busy. You've been very busy.
Yeah, oddly enough. It's a surprise. You know, it's like shocking to be suddenly busy again.
I feel like there was very little Devo activity, and then there was quite a bit of Devo activity.
Right.
And I believe it was, and I'm, again, this could be a Berenstain Bears thing, right? But I heard it originally being said that it was the final tour, and then that seemed to be walked back. Is that correct?
Well, even if it was the final tour, we're only about a quarter of the way into it, because if you look at all the places we haven't been, it would take another year and a half to go there.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm happy for whatever I can get. It's just there's one band I know of that their shtick would every show they play, they would say it was their final show, which I thought which I thought was a marketing term was great.
Tour that was 10 years of final. Yeah.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah, Kiss entering their second decade of final shows. Yeah, right, precisely. Right. No, but you make a good point because, of course, there's many Devo fans the world over that, you know, would love to see the band play again. And, you know, you can't just, you know, play five or six shows and be like, yep, that's it. Peace. We're out.
No, I mean, and when we played in November, we only played, you know, Washington, Oregon, and California. That was that.
Yeah.
So there's still, you know, whatever. What is there? 47 states left. And
that's just this country.
There's New Zealand. There's Japan. Yeah. There's Portugal. There's Spain. There's France. There's Italy and more.
Yeah, and I like that these tours are meant to celebrate like the entire history of the band, right? Like it's something where when you're putting together a live show and you have a lot of material, obviously, you know, there's going to be the ones people want to hear the hits, right? So, such as they are. But what do you, how much of a conversation is it what gets picked? Because there is a lot of great Devo material. You know, I'm a big Something for Everybody fan. You know that. And that's a, and that's wildly underrated in the pantheon, if you ask me. But like,
yeah, I thought there were four great songs on there. Yeah.
Yeah. So like what gets left on the table? Like, and what gets played for these shows?
Well, I mean, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. We could do so much as long as Devo was firing on all cylinders.
Yeah,
because everything, of course, every idea takes effort. Everything you want to do live would require lots of rehearsal, new content on the video screens, you know, possibly new props, which always was something that thrilled me and excited me, you know, energized me. But, you know, at a certain point, no one else felt that way. Like I was like an idiot kind of cheerleader, you know, the field marshal, like, hey, let's go. Yeah. And then you
come
turn
on,
around
gang.
And you're already, you're there alone, you know. It's
like, right, right. Well, and there's been a relatively static lineup, but, I mean, Dave Grohl's still your drummer, too.
Yeah.
or one of them, anyway. You have a few. So then that's going to be different
as
well.
I mean, luckily Jeff Friedel is powerhouse and incredible.
Yeah, great guy.
And because it's not easy to replace Josh Fries, that's for sure. But he's Foo Fightering it, and he's off into the stratosphere of money.
Which, yeah, dude, good for him, right?
Well, when you look at his history, he kind of deserves it. He's done it all. You know,
he's such an adaptable player. Like, it seems like he's played like so many different styles of music. And so
I know it's I called him the Zelig of rock and roll. Because, I mean, he, you know, come on, the Vandals and then Sting, you know, and everything in between. Absolutely crazy. Nine Inch Nails, Devo. I think he did work with Evanescence. He did work with, the band out of Orange County that's all gone now, and Gwen Stefani's band.
No Doubt.
No Doubt.
Even
name it, he's been there, you know, Perfect Circle, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Christopher.
Very adaptable player.
Oh, God.
Wasn't he playing with Guns N' Roses for a while?
He did. He recorded for a long time with... that debacle of an album, Chinese Democracy.
Yeah,
it just went on and on and on, you know.
Yeah, that whole band kind of turned into 8.5 by Fellini for a hot minute, is what it seemed like.
Well, I thought the title was fantastic, you know.
I thought
I got high hopes. Chinese Democracy, that sounds like a Devo title.
Right, yeah.
But then it turned real Devo, like low.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe not so great for the fans of the band, kind of Devo. Yeah.
No.
Playing these shows, you know, I know you played Australia. There was European dates as well. To me, it seems like you're more lucky to find people like bringing their families even along, like on these shows, right? Like multi-generation of Spuds all ganging out.
Yeah, we're like the new wave Grateful Dead.
But hopefully not. No. Hopefully with tighter compositions. Yeah.
Well, the Grateful on dead, whatever.
Grateful on dead. Yeah.
What I mean is the span of people in the audience are kind. It's kind of mind boggling. You look out there and see what you see. We played Darker Waves, as you know, the festival.
Yes. Yeah.
And that was incongruous for Devo to be on that lineup for Darker Waves. And you're in Orange County, Gothland, and we look out, and, you know, there's multiple stages, and you watch people migrate to a particular stage as something starts.
Mm-hmm.
And we watched, like, this, I mean, a Hollywood bull-sized crowd come to our stage, you know, over the first three songs.
Yeah.
And a sea of red hats. And we couldn't believe it. We're looking at all these, like, you know, white bread goth punks and their get up. And we're like, they're paying attention and liking it.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
Amazing. You know, it's truly amazing.
Well, because I don't want to impugn the festival, which seems to do its aesthetic and its thing well. But Devo seems very much like right at the outside of that comfort level of that crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't like the rest of the stuff at all.
Yeah.
So it was interesting, you know, it was kind of, what's the word? Heartwarming.
Right. Right. And it's notable too, that again, you have, and this is something that happens with bands that are long lived. You have people that, like, that's their first time ever seeing the band, you know, they
that's true too. That was true. And that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. That's invaluable. And especially when it's like a band you listen to like all the time. And
because we could still deliver, luckily, you know, we weren't.
The show's good, right?
Pale shadow of what we used to do, you know.
Right.
There's some bands out there that they just don't really do it anymore other than showing up and, yes, this is us. It's right. It's like assisted living. You know,
prop them up and point them at the teleprompter, right?
Yeah.
I was definitely enheartened to note that the Devo documentary looks like it's going to see the light of day now.
Yes, the Vice documentary.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very exciting. It's long been, you know, there's long been a lack of documentary Devo stuff. I mean, there's things here and there.
I wanted it to happen a long time ago, and, you know, there were many directors that were stepping forward that got sloughed off, not by me, and it was disappointing. You know, I always wanted to see a real. I thought Devo should do like something more like a TV miniseries documentary where
sure.
you would take 4 1-hour segments and deal with each of the aspects of the career, you know, because they're so different and there's so much going on and so much to talk about that it would have needed that to not gloss over things and not tidy it up and, you know, whitewash it. And I mean, an hour and a half, it's a fluff piece, you know.
It's hard to get across much nuance and depth with a shortened runtime like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and then there's things like, okay, so I enjoyed the ZZ Top documentary, but what was hilarious to me is of all the stuff that they covered, they get to their Eliminator record, which was their big hit, and then you like look at your watch and like, this has got to almost be over. And then they go, and they still play to this day. And it's like, oh, you're just not going to mention like the 20 records that came after that like was not as interesting. I mean,
right.
But it was, I mean, I was hooting and hollering laughing at it because I was like, wow. What I mean, like that's like kind of owning the cop out to a certain degree. And sort of like, yeah, nobody cares about hearing about those records. I mean, nobody's that interested.
Yeah. It would be nice to see a warts and all version of Devo. And plenty of Rashomon where you're going, well, wait a minute, he says that,
right?
He says that. Which of those things is true?
Well, like we spoke at length about the Devo 2.0 in the past, right? Yeah. Like that's a crazy moment in history. That's just like a blip on the screen compared to all the things that you guys have done. But
But
whole story.
But that, along with everything else, doesn't get mentioned. You know, it's not. Yeah,
It's not going to be in the Cliff's Notes, right? This is like the Cliff's Notes of a career.
No, there's not even the John Belushi cocaine story, you know.
Well, and like just like Something for Everybody as it was conceived versus how it was presented.
Not mentioned. For Everybody is not mentioned.
I was planning on bringing this up anyway, but someone from the comments mentioning the Sparks documentary, the Edgar Wright one. Did you see that?
Good. That's pretty good.
I thought that handled a almost an impossible mission of a topic, that band.
It doesn't insult the audience.
Right.
Right. And that's what I think. Good documentary should not insult the audience. It's like, this should not be a love letter or a promotional piece or a vanity project. It should tell some kind of unvarnished truth. That's really what I think.
It should inform, challenge,
do
the things that the band did.
Yeah, it's like, does any adult with a normal IQ really think that you didn't have any serious flaws or some serious things didn't happen and mistakes were made and went wrong? It's like, come on. It's just not human nature.
That's something I really enjoyed about the Edgar Wright Sparks documentary, because it covers all of it, even the records that nobody cares about or wants to hear, but in a way that is sort of like, oh yeah, they were really in the wilderness here. They couldn't catch a break, but and we're also talking about a band. They did that ridiculous thing where they did 20 albums in 20 nights, and they did one of the records each night, which is even the ones that nobody was like, really, you're doing that one? But like, yeah, they did. The goal was to do it sequentially, right? And
that's really cool.
So ballsy, and it's so distinctly, and it's what it's like a 1,000-mile walk in the desert for an ice cream cone, let's be clear. But I mean, like, that's distinctly those guys. Like,
well, I mean, being an artist, there's going to be plenty of struggle, and to suggest there wasn't, to me, is just insulting to a mature audience.
Yeah, and I think that it's notable too, because you have records that, I've gone on record as saying, "Oh no, it's Devo." I think it's wildly underrated. That I think the production is kind of strange sounding, but there's some incredible songs on
there. I really like that record, But and everyone knows that I was profoundly, depressed over Shout.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, we don't speak of Shout.
Yeah.
But Oh No, It's Devo is fantastic. I mean, that's the one that I think, if it does get mentioned, what was it, Roy Thomas Baker that produced that one? Is that right?
Still do two songs live from Oh No, It's Devo that get some of the biggest responses. That's Peekaboo and That's Good.
Right.
And people go nuts.
Those are great tunes.
And I would love to even do more from that record. I'd love to do Out of Sync.
Out of Sync's great. I think Time Out for Fun's a good one. That's
fun.
Good. There's great tunes. Yeah. Hell, maybe, is Hinckley still locked up? Maybe you can bring him out for Right Desire.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Any of those things could be done, but just take some, elbow grease.
Yeah, and it's, well, and then also you're doing a thing where, I mean, I guess you did that tour sometime back that was all the super early stuff. Right, Butter Beauties and all the.
Oh yeah, that was fun doing the early basement Devo, the hardcore. Yeah.
Hardcore Devo. That's, I just couldn't think of that word.
Yeah, that was my brother's idea, and he never got to see it come to fruition. He died in February of 14, and we went out in June of 14 with that tour.
Yeah, and that's heavy to be doing anything. But it's, especially when you're revisiting like the material when you kind of started playing, like it's, that's got to stir up some emotions.
Yeah, I like that one. And there's a pretty good live video of that show, a documentation of that.
Oh, nice. Okay, cool. Yeah. I went to Paramount. I think the Paramount. I think I saw that one. Was it the Paramount or the Fox? I can't remember. Anyway, I saw it in Oakland. It was great. It was wonderful.
That, what, did we did, are you talking about the album Recreation Show, or are you talking about when we were doing the hardcore tour? You saw it.
The hardcore tour is the one I was.
And you're in, oh. In Paramount, and where? We're in
Oakland, Port? Oakland, California.
Well, Oakland.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I remember. Yes, you're right. You're right.
Because before that, well, so the time I saw you before that is when then the San Francisco Civic Center. There was a, it was a promotion for some car.
Oh, yeah.
There was like a car promotion, at the Civic Center, where like right where Harvey Milk got killed and all this, you know, crazy San Francisco history.
New Nissan Z. Yeah.
And Devo was playing at lunchtime. Which I thought I was like amazing. This was great. That was an incredible. That was an incredible show and experience.
That is Devo right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, and then like everyone was like, "What is this car?" Like nobody knew. Like despite there being like signage everywhere, it just didn't compute for people that like it's for this car. What? Why are they doing that? Like
no, and people were just coming out of the courthouse and office buildings and going to lunch. Like, what's going on?
You got someone that's getting out of divorce court and they walk by and it's like, is that Devo playing?
Right.
It was pretty astounding. But I think that it's notable that like all these iterations, like there's been like a through line through all of it. It's always been a very good presentation. It's been a very good show, like a rock show, like a big rock show. It isn't just like you know, someone sitting there at the computer pushing the
buttons. It develops, and then there's, you know, there's thematic, and it develops because we literally devolve. We show in practice what we talk about in theory by starting with the most kind of structured songs we wrote, you know, the most kind of architectural songs and controlled songs. And then it slowly goes into the early stuff with the ripping off of the yellow suits and uncontrollable urge and mongoloid, smart patrol DNA and gut feeling and gates of steel, and it's all hell breaks loose. So you get a payoff. You get the orgasm.
Right. You just crank. Yeah. You just turn up the heat until it hits a boil. You know.
Yep.
It's been consistent in all the iterations. I think the first time I ever saw you play, I believe it was Lollapalooza. It was you guys and the Ramones and Soundgarden. I think that was in Metallica year, if I remember correctly.
That's right. No. Yeah. We did a couple of Lollapaloozas, but yeah, there was one where it was mostly grunge and heavy metal, and we, and then
you guys and the Ramones.
Yeah, we followed maybe, I can't remember who we followed though, but we played just before Soundgarden, and then Metallica finished the show.
Yes, that's right. Because to this day, that's the only time I ever saw Metallica. And I was like, oh, okay, I'll watch them. I'm already here, right? You know?
Yeah.
And I remember also I was very disappointed because I like Soundgarden, but I felt that their set was very snoozy. It was very, very, very downbeat. It was kind of a letdown after you guys. I was like, all right, I'm gonna go wander around a little bit.
Yeah. Well, Chris was a genuinely depressed guy.
Yeah. Well, and that's it. And in retrospect, that album, very good. It's just not. It doesn't have like any block rockers on it. It's like
right.
It's more pensive and they were excited about playing those songs. Okay, sure, I get it. It just wasn't what I wanted to hear right then. I don't know.
Yeah.
But whatever. There was like tens of thousands of people there. They weren't trying to cater to me. I think that okay, so there's some folks in the chat bring it up, and I always forget about this because I just kind of mentally redact the shout record. Are you aware that Puppet Boy on that is like the TikTokers like it? Like it's kind of like a minor.
Now that is one song I really, really liked from Shout.
Yeah. Well, the Zoomers like it too. It's all over. On all these sites that they like it.
I'm forgetting what happened there. Somebody licensed it. They were using it in some magic show or something in Vegas. They were
really?
Using
okay.
Puppet Boy and with choreography and everything. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, the young folks like it.
It is a good dance song for choreographers.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. How do you feel about when you were putting together the compilation, the 50 years of De-Evolution compilation, and just going through everything, because there's certain decisions on there, like, okay, so there's Disco Dancers on there, but it's like the 7-inch version, right? And there's like, you have choices of certain songs of like, okay, do we go with this version, do we go with that version, so on and so on. How much of was it just like, okay, we're gonna honor the legacy of the band by doing this, and then how much is there the desire to sort of like tweak things a little
bit? It was creative collaboration, and there were areas of compromise. I mean, I didn't agree with everything, but I have to say that Rhino was responsive and listened a lot to the ideas and why I wanted to do certain things. And, you know, Mark would weigh in when he was interested. But when it comes to the vinyl, you know that most of it's about how many minutes can you cut
how
on a side of vinyl.
How do you have? Yeah, right. Absolutely. Yeah.
And that's a lot of those decisions that you're referring to there had to do with the, what, there's four, in the box set, there's four vinyl records.
Right, right.
Two and two, double gatefold. And that was because even, you know, with culling it down, it needed that much vinyl to get the stuff on there that you need to get on there to legitimately say this is a 50-year compilation.
Right. Yeah, because there's a lot to go through. Right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
And then there's like hard decisions that sometimes have to be made. And
yeah. Well, the weirdest one that happened that I think it was just a mistake. I know no one on our end made such a decision, which was Smart Patrol.
Yeah, I was gonna say Smart Patrol. Yeah.
Doesn't go into DNA, and it's like I didn't even realize. We had a version that didn't
Do that. Yeah, because I think the fans, I think this, like you almost think of them as one song, like because they just seamlessly, you play them that way too.
Clearly, from the time we married those two, that medley became, in our minds, one thing.
So it's so weird when you hear that and just get, and then it's, oh, and I guess it's Girl You Want Now. Okay. Weird.
Yeah.
But...
And don't ask me how that happened. And Mark doesn't know either.
That's funny. You think you guys would if you guys don't know, I guess you don't have much hope of finding out why.
Because earlier on, you know, you have to realize how many months it went on and on and on, and you'd get these playlists, you know, get these files sent to you. And Smart Patrol did have DNA.
Right, right.
So somebody there, you know, in the final assembly at Rhino, whatever files they accessed, they might have been on autopilot. They didn't even, I don't even think they knew.
Yeah.
But we didn't know there was such a cut where it ends.
That it even existed, sure.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Why would you? I did appreciate that you included both the Warner Brothers versions of Mongoloid and Jocko Homo and the earlier versions, the meaner sound. I call them the meaner sounding ones. I guess they're Bougie Boy versions, right? The ones that like that guitar sound he's got is just like so, like yeah.
Well, it's from an acoustic head amp with a 5-band equalizer in it that was famous in the early 70s, and it's so extreme and so ridiculous that it's great.
It's so raunchy, like it hits like not that it sounds like it, but like that Kink song, right? Like where it's, you know, what's the story that he like took a knife to the speaker or something along those lines? I can't remember precisely, but it's just so rowdy. Like it's such a
it's shredded, yeah.
And so then, and as much as I love the versions on the records, like it's a way different vibe. Like it's way more of a just a real. Yeah, just a real rowdy vibe on those ones.
Well,
they both represent
the Boogie Boy versions are smelly.
Right, you can smell
really
those
are.
Mixes. Yes.
Really
Well, and then what did you say? Because there's a few. Because there's like I'm a Potato, right? That demo from '74 that's included in there. Like,
I love that song.
Well, which is great, but how, like it seems like you could go down the rabbit hole of digging up kind of cool, weird, obscure stuff.
Well, the only stuff that was left, you know, other than, you know, Hardcore Volume 1 and Hardcore Volume 2 over the years, is this new thing that came out, or did it come out, or is it coming out, called Art Devo. I think it's Futurismo. And it's all the other stuff you're talking about that we did go down the rabbit hole and find that is on released basement tapes and garage tapes. And now it can be told, it can be bought. It's called Art Devo. It's a really nice package.
Yeah, that's the one that's got the hands, I think, or the, like, the gloved hands on it and stuff. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's some cool stuff on there. I don't know. I think it's is that British Futurismo? I don't know if I'd
I think so. All I know is that there are some truly obscure tracks on that one.
Right. Nothing. Anything from Dove the Band of Love?
Dove the Band of Love. Yeah, and I think there's also.
Have we ever talked about that? I don't know if we have.
Maybe not.
Tell us,
Dove the Band of Love. I think we only played live three times, maybe. Three times as Dove, the Band of Love.
So, and the conceit of this is that you went on stage as another band, Dove, the Band of Love.
Yeah, we didn't want opening acts because of all the problems with opening acts. First of all, you spend all this time in soundcheck setting up everything beautifully. Everything works. Everything sounds good. And then, you know, the backup act comes on after you, sets their stuff up over years,
and
screws up all your connections, burns out the audience with loud, bad music, and then you come out, your sound is ruined, and the audience is burned out. So we said, we don't do that. It's an evening with Devo, and they said, no, you got to have an opening act. So we go, okay, we got this band, and we fooled them a few times.
Right.
Dove the Band of Love. And so we'd put on these Century 21 real estate, horrible, like, leisure suits that Century 21 agents used to wear, mustard-colored polyester suits with the open collars, the green visor, you know, that shades the light, and white loafers. White leather loafers, right?
Right, right.
And we'd do our Dove the Band of Love set. And, you know, since Devo, the real Devo, was so kind of uniform and so kind of removed from reality when we would walk on stage, people didn't really know how we looked anyway.
Yeah, especially Devo. Not in those days, right? You can just go on the internet and be like, what does Devo look like? And that picture would come up, right?
So when we came out, they really didn't know the stupid Dove, the Band of Love, was us.
They just thought it was some jumps that they didn't want to see.
Yeah, so they start screaming, get the fuck off! We want Devo! Fuck you! You know? And my favorite song we did was You Gotta Serve Yourself, which was a parody of Bob Dylan's You Gotta Serve Somebody, mixed with the music from James Black and the Whites, Contort Yourself. So the music was Contort Yourself. The lyrics were parodies of Bob Dylan.
It's like a Contortions Dylan mashup.
Oh,
great.
It was hilarious.
And you did Worried Man too, right? Which eventually you did play as Devo, but you did Worried Man, that's it as well, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we did that's great. I honestly don't remember if we ever talked about it or not, but I love the, first of all, that you could do that and like fool people, right? Because nowadays I think people are too aware.
No, you could never do it now. And there, it did get documented. We did it at this festival in Minneapolis called M80, which was 1980. And we came on stage and did three songs as Dove the Band of Love, and Chuck Statler shot it. And so, you know, with one camera, but it shows, and it's good. It's it's hilarious.
It's so great. Well, and it's, you know, like I feel like that was a very de-evolutionary tactic.
We were having fun.
open for yourself and have the band be like, you know, unwitting chumps almost. you know, they're just there for the gig, man.
It was great.
So with Worried Man, Human Highway, was that where that when it first showed up?
Yeah.
We talked a little about Human Highway in the past, but tell me a little bit, you know, you guys' relationship with Neil Young is so kind of intertwined around that time, and it's so interesting. Is he in the documentary, by the way? I haven't seen it yet. Sorry.
No, he's not, and I don't know why. I mean, you know, there was a whole other documentary before this documentary.
Yeah.
And they interviewed, like, Elliot Roberts, and they interviewed Bill Gerber, and they interviewed Dave Grohl, and they interviewed Neil Young, and they interviewed Iggy Pop, and we had access to all that footage, and Chris Smith didn't use any of it. Yeah. I'm telling you, there's a whole, you could do 10 other documentaries if you took the same load of content that he had and give it to 10 really good directors, you'd see 10 completely different documentaries.
Now, what I would love is that if people sat down at Sundance or whatever to like watch a documentary and it was all Dove the Band of Love.
There you go. That'd be Devo. That would be Devo. Right?
I'd be like, what is this? What is this? That's crazy, though, to have that footage and not use it. That's nuts.
That'd be great. That'd be like Spinal Tap. And we could dress like Dove the Band of Love as old Dove now
and talk
about how we hated Devo. It would be great.
Oh, they were jerks to us. Yeah, yeah, they were terrible. Yeah, absolutely. And that reminds me of...
we hated opening for them.
A Spinal Tap, I mean, of course, commentary tracks are a thing of the past in the age of streaming, but they did do a commentary track in character that was just them, like, talking as, like, the characters. Oh, yeah, what happened? Oh, yeah, he died.
That's
like, it's like another movie. It's great. It's fantastic. It's
fantastic.
Why? So... Don't get me wrong. I'm the first one to be like, movies are too long. You know, make movies shorter, please. But if you have all that footage, why wouldn't you use them? I mean, not like, don't get me wrong. Dave Grohl's in every music documentary.
Well, that's why it would have required a different format other than this time-tested and true and frankly tired hour-and-a-half documentary, right? I think, again, like on, you know, Netflix or Hulu or something like that, where an hour isn't really an hour, it's like 48 minutes or whatever. You know, four segments.
You could do as a series, sure, absolutely.
In successive nights or once a week, that would have told each period and given it the heft that it needs. Like, here's what happened in 73 to 76. Here's what happened in 77 to 79. Here's 80 to 82. And then here is when Devo goes down hard with Enigma Records, right? And sinks with the ship, you know.
Yeah, the pioneers that got scalped.
Yeah, and then you come back with something for everybody.
Well, and we've trained, the populace has now been trained to consume entertainment in bingeable formats and to watch things as a limited
and
event
series.
And that's
why it would have worked.
More and now than ever.
It would have told a full story that way.
Right, right.
Yeah, things would get their due.
That's it. Well, I guess it's still possible, right? Or is it? I don't know.
I guess technically it really is. I mean, you know, all these contracts you're forced to sign where, you know, people still want exclusivity in a world where that idea is kind of dumb.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there's nothing that could come out within a year or so of this one. You know what I mean? That kind
right,
of thing.
Right, right. Yeah, like a non-compete kind of.
They want no one else to be interested in anything else you have to say by the time you get to say it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Is that, the complete truth about De-Evolution, right? Like all of the videos and things along those lines.
There's hardly any use of our videos in the thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a whole segment in itself. The making of those videos and what went on. And I know how much time and energy and my heart and soul I poured into each of those planning them and directing them and working with Chuck Statler. I mean, there's great stories there.
Yeah. But yeah, each one has like a little, like you'd have a little mini documentary about that, right?
Oh yeah.
And that's, yeah. And to be clear for people that are not aware, I think it was Laserdisc first, right? Eventually it came out in DVD, but I think it actually came on Laserdisc first.
Laserdisc.
Which is amazing. Format of the future, right? But then, even then, on that physical release, there still wasn't, was it Dr. Detroit and the Hendrix cover, I think, still weren't included on it because, like, reasons?
Legal rights issues, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and again, that comes, so, but it goes back to, okay, so the show WKRP, right? Like, that's... Right. They can't use the music, which was intrinsic to the show, about a radio station playing music. Like, there would be gags and bits related to, like, what song is being played. But then when everybody got into rights issues and, you know, the idea of diegetic music being profitable and things along those lines, then, sorry to kind of nerd out here. But
well, I mean, the world is run by lawyers.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I like that you have... Devo characters that are coming back, like, all right, like Rod Reuter, for instance, right?
Yeah.
A perfect example.
A good character, yeah.
I like that you know, with the filmed intros and things like that, you there's references to it and things along those lines. Like, there's a continuity to it, right?
Absolutely. You know, it was constantly being in a way autobiographical about our experience in the business and just extracting humor from it. So, you know, you move once removed from reality but and exaggerated. But as I've often told people and told you, I think, everything Rod Reuter says was said to me or to me and the group together. I didn't make up any lines for Rod Reuter. All I did is go home and remember them because I was so horrified. I'd write them down, put them in his mouth.
Because he's sort of like a conglomerate of like a pastiche, if you will, like of different music executives and things along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
The more things change, the more they stay the same with
he was a combination of a couple promoters and an agent and two A&R men. Kip Cohen from A&M Records being one of them.
Yeah.
And Bob, God, I can't remember his last name now, at Warner's. He started Blue Thumb Records. But anyway, these are the guys that came up with these memorable lines that etched themselves into your brain.
Right. Well, and it's perfectly emblematic of your approach to kind of being part of the mainstream, but also being very aware of just how preposterous and unholy two actual creative people the mainstream are.
Yeah, it was a tightrope.
I think that there's a lot of appetite for Devo concepts now, but it's interesting that has there been any, like, since the Something for Everybody record, has there been any interest in there being an opportunity, a multimedia opportunity along the lines of what Devo 2.0 should have been, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And do they suck or not?
No, I mean, there are people that come forward and with those ideas. And of course, they're the ideas I've had for a long time. But, you know, it requires a certain budget, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It requires certain level of expertise and, so far, you know, couldn't get everybody in line to work with any given entity that came forward. That's why I ended up just trying something with that company 4D on my own, because I mean, they are creating immersive three-dimensional reality. You put on the Oculus headset, you go in there, you're in that world. I've seen the examples. I've experienced it. What they shot with me, all the all the data is there, but the right. rendering time and money it would take to make this facsimile of what you see me do into the reality of what you're supposed to experience is hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Right. It's just that there's not the infrastructure there to sustain it necessarily.
Right. They had a big studio in Culver City in the same complex as Apple. They had the special room, the special camera set up, all the editors, everything. They had it all. But they didn't end up finishing anything. So what you see of me is a facsimile of if a user was in the space flying a drone, right?
right, yeah.
This is what they could do. So it's you know, it's a kindergarten wank compared to what you really could do. And I did see what you could really do.
So for people that are not up on the latest thing, specifically, we're talking about the you can see the aspects of these things in the video for the lounge version of Pay You Back. That's you can watch again a drone running around on that set, of which the Jerry Casale character is the director, and then you also have Jihad Jerry singing.
And it's the first and only time I've ever put on a suit with no shirt.
Just to get that real director charm, right? Yeah. but it's set up in such a way where there's a lot going on. There's the backup dancers. There's Steve Bartek.
And there's Josh Freese.
Well, and Josh Freese is in there.
And there's,
Steve, yeah.
Mr. Oingo.
Yeah, Steve Bartok, who actually he's going to be on next week too, so I'm excited to talk to him as well. The idea was actual virtual reality, right? This whole scenario, like it's a heady concept that I'm not sure if it completely gets across unless you're willing to dive in a little more, which is a very Devo thing as well.
Yeah. I wish they had finished it because I guarantee you, when you put that Oculus headset on and you're in that environment, you almost get seasick. You feel like you don't know where the ground is right. underneath your feet, even though you're standing in a studio. You're in there. You're in that world. You can walk right up to me. You can walk right up the rungs of the dome where I'm singing and come right in my face. You know, it's great.
Yeah, and it feels like the ideas behind it are more along the lines of like what people kind of originally envisioned virtual reality to be, rather than just like, oh yeah, put your phone on these goggles.
Yeah.
And I guess look at Mark Zuckerberg's legs. I don't know what it is that they're trying to do in this metaverse, but like,
I don't even
like
mean, yeah.
It's just like, yeah. Why would you want to do that? Like, why are you so heavily invested in this? But anyway, I think that, like it's an incredible concept, right? And that's right. And for folks that haven't seen, I'll throw it into the show notes and the chat so they can check out the video. But even just what's there is pretty cool because it's got this kind of weird, otherworldly. Like everybody's gonna right now associated with that AI art, right? All the art that scrapes all from all the real artists and has that sort of just sheen of like something seems off and kind of the colors are a little too bright and. Like it's all just a little bit doesn't feel correct.
Yeah, it's got that slightly wanky aesthetic of those people in that world that control everything. These programmers and designers, they go for that kind of cheesy thing. Although when you're doing a lounge version of a song, the cheese kind of works.
It does, and that comes from a rich tradition of Devo always had like the easy listening versions and stuff. You even have that on the EP. What is the mindset of doing the lounge version? Like why is that there? Just because
it's an indulgence. I have to be honest. I love doing it. I do.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to try to intellectualize it.
Because it used to be that you would like you walking around the grocery store and or like an elevator or something and you would hear like raindrops keep falling on my head or something, but it'd be like the Muzak version.
Exactly.
Yeah. And now it's just like they play stuff like it, you know, just like you would hear on the radio or something. Like just, it's almost like a lost. I'd like to hear a
Lounge Pay You Back in a supermarket. That would be great.
That would be a very Devo moment for sure. Absolutely. Yeah. But it's, you have some great players. You might as well utilize them, right? I mean, Bartek is he's a. Yeah.
Oh, they love doing it. Everybody loved doing it, you know? Yeah.
And then you get to kind of examine the song from a different perspective and maybe bring something out of it. There's nothing wrong with that at all.
Well, all the anger was gone.
It doesn't. Well, that's a good point. Yeah, because Pay You Back, especially, it's
more about just paying somebody back. You owe them 20 bucks, you give it back.
Right. Yeah, just exactly. It's a song about getting paid back 20 bucks you on someone. Exactly. Sure. But yeah, like it being kind of like, you know, feeling like you should have a tiki drink or something while you're listening to it is like a way different vibe for it along those lines. There is like a through line with all the videos on the EP, like, because you have the, I think we talked about this before, but the first Pay You Back video, it, Invisible Man kind of starts up like right after that. Like there's, it's almost as if it's like one longer story.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Invisible Man. And, we've done a lounge version of that as well.
It's trying to break into lounge music and then
I would love life. I would love to go do a set somewhere. Yeah. I would do
just
that.
Do like lounge Devo and Jerry songs.
Yeah. I would do that. Yeah.
That's it. You thought you had a bad with Dove the Band of Love. Check it out. It's the lounge version of Love, Dove the Band of Love. Well, but it's musically, it allows the songs to be presented in a different way, and you get to see if they shine, right? Because I don't think it's true for everything, but for a lot of cases, I think if you have a really great song, you can play it in a stripped down manner, and it'll. I mean, look at. Obviously, Hollywood directors feel that way because I feel like every movie has a preview with like the song that you already know, but it's minor key and there's a female vocalist and it's okay, we get it. Yeah.
Right.
But that seems like it still seems a more fully actualized version of that sort of mindset of changing the context of things. Because when Devo came out, I mean, the idea of even there being like, you know, synthesizer driven rock music was still like, what crazy. Mm-hmm. And then now this has been so normalized that like, it's like, it's not a big deal. That's what you're doing vibe music. We're doing vibe music now. And we have all these synthesizers. Okay. And I think that that's notable. And I think that's notable too, because even around upsetting the dominant paradigm so many times that you have guitars that say Coors on them.
Yeah.
Right? Hanging on a wall, which is amazing. It's like, I see that. It's like, oh my God, that's a perfect example of de-evolution in action. It's Coors, absolutely. Like the least likely guitar beer you can
ridiculous.
Think of.
Ridiculous. Yeah. 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 You know, we used to ask, how low can you go? And the answer is, lower than you can imagine.
Well, did you ever think about the idea that Robert F. Kennedy's son would be running for president, and not the way that you think?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's, wait till you see what happens next, folks.
It's a harsh
joke. It's all gonna. It's coming crashing down in the fall.
Cheery. Anyway, so I think that there's. There's a lot of appetite for seeing Devo and for there to be more Devo shows in all the areas, you know, Devo shows in Antarctica. Sure. Why not? Yeah. That, you know, like all these different places, but you also are continuing to write and record music, right? So you have the Invisible Man EP. That's we came on, we talked about that at length last time, I believe. That doesn't stop, right? Like you're continuing to make more music. You know, it seems like Mark's very head down in the composition world still, without the license, like doing that. But I feel like that there's certainly an audience and an appetite for newer music. Are you still driven to write and create in that way?
I do. You know it, just like you do. You can't help it. You can't help it. I've got a suite of songs I'm trying to finish right now. It's called Wetiko, W-E-T-I-K-O. You can look up what that means. It's a Native American belief based on their unfortunate intersection with the white man. And you read the definition of a Wetiko and you go, oh, how come Devo didn't find this out long ago?
It's like earlier on. Yeah.
Companion piece to de-evolution. And
that's like a Native American, it's like a cannibalistic spirit, right? In Native American.
It's what they considered the evil in the white man to be like a physical virus, and that it went beyond greed. It was psychosis. And I don't want to blow the definition. I think you should.
Yeah, we can wait for the record. We can. That's fine. I think that's interesting.
Yeah, and I've written a suite. There's three songs that are linked together like a medley. Nice.
It's an actual mind virus as opposed to the ones that Elon Musk wants to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Those were good ones. Those two are good ones.
So when you think about Devo's place, like in rock and roll, right, and what you guys accomplished,
yeah,
and the influence, the massive amount of influence. I mean, again, talk about Soundgarden, right? Soundgarden did a Devo cover at one point. Nirvana did a Devo cover, B-side, yeah, sure. But what do you feel the legacy of Devo and the larger cultural zeitgeist is?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, I would hope that people would say, you know, Devo, they did as good as they could, as long as they could, and they redefined what pop music could be or rock music could be, because we came along at a time when the prevailing cliche that had built up around rock stars and rock music had gotten so stale it turned in on itself, and we considered it a joke. So what we were doing was deconstructing that.
Right.
You know, we were commenting on the preening rock star. And that's why our version of Satisfaction sounds like you can't get no satisfaction.
Right. It sounds very unsatisfied. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, okay, this is what a person would hear if they couldn't get no satisfaction.
Yeah.
And the movements and everything. So I would like to think that we would be the harbingers of rock music deconstruction.
And not just with the music itself, but with the entire, you know, the video, yeah, element, thing, the art, which reminds, yeah, me that there's that, is it the MoMA, right, that's doing that restored films and everything? That's coming up fairly soon, isn't it? That's at the time of this recording. Is that just an archival project? Because I know I saw
it mostly is. I mean, you know, they do like what we did. I mean, they had previously taken Beautiful World into their collection, but this is
not going to help the audio listeners, but here's a before and after restoration picture.
This is the whole body of work restored.
Yeah.
And MoMA's honoring it.
Yeah, that's, I mean, if there's any greater vote of confidence in being in the MoMA, I can't think of one for visual arts. I mean, that's
kind of cool.
That's great. So is it interesting to kind of like go back and revisit those older times and those older images and think about them in context?
Well, it's beyond nostalgia. Sometimes I get really depressed because I can, by watching that, I can transport myself back to the me that was there doing that and going, why can't I go back there?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I'm just thinking about, like, I think it's the Girl You Want video where, like, it just seems like the contrast is just cranked. All the reds are just like, oh my God.
Yeah, we did
happening?
That on purpose. Yeah. It was, we had discovered through editing and video in the early days that there was a lot of accidental out of phase work that editors would do.
Yeah.
And it happened one day in an editing bay, and I go, what just happened there? He goes, well, it's out of phase. Let me go fix it. And I said, well, can you do it on purpose? Could you leave it like
right.
that? And can you dump it off onto tape like that? And they go, why would you want to do that? And we go,
well, it looks like the TV's messy now. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And they were able to do it. And that's what you're looking at. Yeah.
I remember being like one of the first instances of messing with the format of what people were consuming it on, which was rather right. than seeing it on a film screen, they were seeing it in like video format, or LaserDisc, whatever the hell was at the time, and it also reminds me of like Gremlins 2, the Joe Dante movie, right? Which I love, and it's a perfect example of like he did something unique and special and amazing. Hollywood wanted him to do the same thing over again, and decided to do something completely different and even crazier. But there's a scene in the movie where like the film melts, and you get to see like and it's like, oh, the gremlins have melted the film. Like, but at the time when you watch it for the first time, I was in the theater, and I was like, oh no, what happened? And then you're like, oh, this is part of the movie. But then when they brought it to home video, it was like that. It looked like the videotape got messed up, basically.
Yeah. Now, who was that? Joe Dante?
Joe Dante. Yeah. For Gremlins too.
Yeah, he did great stuff.
And it's it just occurred to me that like seeing that video, and I say that now. My uncle came back with a LaserDisc player and played the LaserDisc of The Complete Truth About De-Evolution. And I was like, hey, what's wrong with this thing? And then I was like, oh, they're doing the Gremlins 2 thing. Oh, okay, awesome. Anyway, so the restorations of all these old films. There's a Venom MoMA coming up. I guess the Peter Conheim is the archivist?
Peter Conheim, he did it, yeah.
It looks like it's, from what I've seen of it, it looks like it's done very much with care.
Yeah.
And
he's,
love,
he's
right?
good at that. He's very good.
And that's it does beg the question, like, why isn't there more of that stuff now? Like, why Devo didn't have to stop making that stuff? Is that just something like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, well, you'd have to ask someone else that question. It's, you know, it's not me.
That's fair. I
have to go.
Yeah, I was gonna say I do want to be mindful of your time, Jerry. It's so great to have you on again, and it's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Is there anything you got coming up that you want people to know about that we didn't already discuss?
Not really. No, I mean, we have the premiere at Sundance of the documentary. We have the archival ceremony at MoMA, and then hopefully Devo will reemerge sometime in the spring.
Fantastic. Well, I know there's a lot of people that would love to see you play, and I am one of them, and I haven't actually seen you play in a long time because I missed the Riot Fest show. So deeply appreciated. Love everything you do. Until next time.
All right. See you. Thanks so much, Jerry. Talk to you soon.
There he goes. Jerry Casale. We're going to play the lounge version of Pay You Back that we talked about. So if you haven't seen that, you're going to see it now, folks. And it looks a little something like this.
Action. A bullet for your war of attrition and your exploitation of the human condition. A duplicitous man on a curious mission, waiting for the other shoe to drop.
I'm gonna pay you back. I'm gonna pay you back. I'm gonna pay you back.
Right.
I am buying. Your lips are moving. That means you're lying. You appropriated credit. You let them think you said it. I gotta give you credit. That hat trick is impressive. Take all the fame and glory. Deflect the blame and rewrite the story. I'm gonna pay you back. I'm gonna pay you back. I'm gonna pay you back.
Right now.
100.
There it is, lounge version. I'm gonna pay you back, Jerry Fuxali. Hey, let's hear one more song. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Hope you guys got something out of it. There's a lot of great diva stuff. A lot of give Jerry Fuxali stuff that's happening, and yeah, it's always great to have him on. So I hope you guys enjoyed that. And if it's your first time to the show, welcome. It is indeed a beautiful world.
Thank you.
beautiful world. It's a beautiful world. It's a beautiful world for you. For you. For you. It's not for me.
It's a beautiful world.
For you.
It's a beautiful.
There you go. A little beautiful world for you. Of course, by Devo. And before that, the lounge version of Pay You Back by Devo's Jerry Vixali. Get that. The website you can find in the show notes. GeraldVixali.com. Cool. Lots of interesting stuff coming up. There's the MoMA thing, the documentary coming up as well. I want to thank everyone for listening to the show. As always, the name of the show is Code Neutrons Protonic Reversal. Thank you so very much for listening to it. The show airs Thursdays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 Pacific. Streaming live, YouTube and Twitch. Archives of the show always available for free at protonicreversal.com. No ads, no sponsors, no kidding. If you like the show and want to get episodes sooner, though, $1 a month at patreon.com/protonicreversal supports the show and helps achieve that goal.
This is my farewell transmission.
So thank you very much. Thank you, everyone, for sharing the show around, even just a single episode.
Signing off.
Liking, following, subscribing to your platform of choice.
All the ships at sea.
Letting others know about it. All that helps people discover the show, and it's just a darn nice thing to do. So deeply appreciate it. Coming up next week, Steve Bartek of Oingo Boingo. So,
50,000 watts of power.
Jerry collaborator. So that should be good. Looking forward to that.
I want to ionize the air.
I always appreciate all the fans of the show, hearing back from everyone. Stay safe out there.
This microphone turns sound into electricity.
And check you later.
Can you hear me now? Out on Route 128, dark and lonely. I got my radio on. Can you hear me now? 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 In the radio. welcome to my top 10. I'd like to thank our sponsor. But we haven't got a sponsor. Not if you were the last man on earth. She was prepared to prove it. This one goes out to a special girl. But there is no special girl! It's the end of radio. The last announcer plays the last record. The last what? Leaves the transmitter. Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now? Broadcasting if there's no one there to receive. It's the end of radio. As we come to the close of our broadcast day. Radio.